Hey everyone, this is Josh, co-founder of Urban Valor. Welcome to another episode of the Urban Valor podcast. Our guest today is Marine veteran Spencer Ziaset, also known as Z. Z grew up in Bethalto, Illinois. He used to create fight games with his friends as a kid and nearly got his eye taken out by a sharpened spear during one of these games. Z speaks on the time he was sent flying through a van window as it rolled over and landed on top of him. He was inspired to become a Marine from playing video games such as Halo and Battlefield. He enlisted as an 0311 infantry rifleman and was attached to 1st Battalion, 4th Marines, Charlie Company. During his enlistment, Z began designing military-themed art. Upon transitioning out of the Marine Corps, he created a company called Phaseline and took his art to a new level. If you enjoyed this episode, go give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment to help support our veterans. The bigger the community, the bigger the impact. If you'd like to contribute your story to Urban Valor or know anyone else who may, reach out to us on Instagram at Urban Valor TV, or you can email us at team@urbanvalor.com. Enjoy the show.
My name is Spencer Ziaset. Mostly I go by Z. The branch I was in was the Marine Corps. I served from 2017 to 2021. The job I was in, I was a 0311 rifleman.
And what rank did you get out?
Sergeant. Well, sergeant technically on paper, corporal on like EAS. So when I got out, actually what happened was I got out, I got corporal, and then 2 weeks later, I got an email that said sergeant. So, and then I checked my MarineNet, the online thing that doesn't work, and it said sergeant. So I'm just going to go with whatever.
Sergeant. You're a sergeant.
Yeah.
All right. Talk to me about your childhood upbringing. Where are you from and what was your childhood like?
My upbringing was really different. When I first was born, my mom had told me that in the hospital, there was like a tornado going on and the power had gone out. So when I was born, like they were using flashlights and stuff to, you know, when I came out and everything. And then later on through life, my parents have both been going to school to go be nurses. At that time, we didn't have a lot because they didn't have really stable jobs at that point. So one of the things I do remember about my family, and one of the small things, me and my mom would have these things called like carpet picnics. And my mom would set out this blanket on the carpet in front of our TV. And she'd get like Little Caesars and stuff and like bring this pizza down to the carpet. And we'd just sit there and eat pizza all the time. but I want to claim that like with my mom, like I'm probably the reason that she is the way she is, like because I drove up the wall with all the stuff I did. I mean, yeah.
What town were you born in? Where you were worrying about a tornado when you were born?
Oh, Bethalto, Illinois. I was born in Alton, Illinois, but Bethalto is where I grew up.
Got it.
So when I was younger, I remember we were building like these like so there was like this parade at our grade school, or I don't remember what grade it was, and we had to build these like cardboard like planes and cardboard cars and cardboard trains, and we had built them. And I mean, by the end of the day, when all those kids had their trains and stuff going down the track or whatever, I had my car that I had built, but I thought it was more cool to like bump into people, like traffic jam stuff. So at the end of the day, I was running into all these kids with my car. So when they're coming down that parade, everybody's thing was all messed up because some jackass kid had just ran into everybody. So yeah. That's one of the things, because my mom spent like hours on that thing, and all I did was destroy it.
Wow.
Yeah. Where I was growing up, because we kind of grew up in the country, like it was like fighting was like your pastime, because like you didn't have anything else to do, like maybe video games and stuff. But at that time, like nothing crazy was really coming out. So we fought all the time. So of course, my mom always, I remember one time. Actually, this goes with the fighting. I was sitting in the tub because I was really young, and my mom had came in to tell me something, and I was counting all the bruises and the scars, and I told her the number, and she's like, just call me a crazy kid and stuff. That's all we did as kids was fight, and we even created games that were just around fighting and stuff, which,
I mean, what kind of fighting games you guys used to play?
We used to play this game called Gladiator. Like, and literally what it was like, there was no sense or purpose to this game other than, like, you just beat the shit out of each other. And at the end of the day, you, like, we would walk to this gas station called Casey's and get, like, sodas and stuff. But I remember one time I had to lie to my mom because this kid had we were playing, and I had like this like little bow and arrow that I made out like a corn stalk and some like paracord and some junk. And this kid had a like this spear that he made, and that thing was like freaking sharp. Like he actually sharpened it and stuff. So it was kind of scary. And we were fighting, and like in the game, like if you hit someone's leg, you hit someone's arm. You like say like your leg's gone, your arm's gone. And what had happened is I like hit this kid's like leg, and I guess like I was like, your leg's gone. Like, you know, it's kids. And this kid had just thrown this spear like right at my face, and it hit like right under my eye, and it like slit open my eye right here and down my side and scarred my retina and stuff. And I was on my way back home. I was like, man, what am I going to tell my mom? Cause I was riding my bike back home. And, so what I ended up telling her was like, yeah, I was riding my bike and I hit a stop sign. I told her that I hit the corner, the sharp end of the stop sign, and it cut my eye open. And like, I think she just learned the real story like a year ago or something. You know? So when I was younger, actually, there was this crazy thing that happened when I was really not even younger, kind of like teenage, like about to join. That was when I was kind of looking into joining the Marines and stuff like that. What had happened was we were coming back from this youth camp because my mom was like very religious. So then I kind of had to be religious because, you know, that's just how things rolled. And I was coming back from this youth camp called Winterfest. And while we're driving down the road, I guess the tire for the front of the van had popped out or something had happened. And I was sitting in the back and being like that, you know, that just weird angsty, like teenager, like, you know, just laying there. I had my earbuds in and I had my phone in my pocket. And I'm just laying in the back without the seatbelt on and stuff. And it's a big old church van. And once that tire had spun out and popped, the semi came coming down the same road as we were. And that van had spun out. And then there was the overpass and it flipped over the overpass. And as that happened, my body shot out of the window of the van. And I had landed kind of like on the ground with my hands. And I think it was either my arm or something had like kind of popped. So I was more worried about the pop than anything. And then I'm laying there and I could see the van coming and tumbling down. And then it just landed right on top of me, you know, like right on top of my chest. So it was like hard for me to breathe and stuff. And of course, it's like a church group. So like cursing's like frowned upon and stuff. And I'm over there, I'm like, get this fucking van off me. Like, what the fuck is this shit? Like, get this fucking off of me. And all the church is like over there, they're praying and stuff and like praying for the van to come off of me or something like that. And like, I just started yelling. I'm like, stop fucking praying. Like, come push the van off. And this other church van that was trailing us or following us had, it was like Thompsonville or something. They were like all these bigger dudes, you know, like corn fed dudes. They had pulled off to the side of the road and they lifted it off of me. Yeah.
Wow.
And it was crazy because that story is like, you can find it online. Our church had used that story for the longest time.
Where did it happen at?
In Illinois. Yeah.
Wow, man.
So we were just coming back. It was actually Branson, Missouri, because we were coming out of Branson, Missouri into Illinois. Yeah.
Wow, man. So that van landed on your chest? How did you survive a van landing on your chest?
I don't know. To this day, I'm like, I talk about religion and stuff with all my friends all the time. We have like crazy talks about that stuff. And to this day, like, I've talked to the people of the accident and stuff like that. They don't know. Like, there wasn't, like, when you look at like the ground in the van, there was no gap. Like in the ground, like where my body would have laid and it wouldn't have put the full pressure. It was literally like flat ground and the van was on top of me. Because, I mean, there was no rain, no nothing had happened. So the texture of the ground wasn't any different than
Was the van like fully on top of you?
Yeah. Like the full van was across my chest. Like across my chest and I was laid out like this.
That's wild.
I swear, man. It was crazy.
Did you go to the hospital?
Yeah, I went to, we all did. All of the people that were in the accident, there was, I think, like 6 or 7 people in that accident. And we all had been just shot over in the ambulance over to the ICU or the ER or whatever it is. And my mom had came in and seen me, and she was like, what the heck? All I came out of that stuff with was like a big old cut on the back of my arm. a couple cuts on the back of my back, some glass and stuff. Because I had shot through the window, you know, like straight through, and then landed on the ground and it rolled on top. So I had glass on me, I had blood on my arm and stuff. And I think it was either my wrist or my elbow. One of them was like kind of, I think it was bruised or broke or something. Because I have a picture of it when I got in the accident. I had my arm wrapped up and my elbows in like a sling. Yeah.
I mean, at that point, you're just happy to still be breathing, right?
Yeah, when I, like, that actually caused, like, some pretty bad anxiety for when I was younger, because, like, I was worried about, like, even today, if, like, I'm in, like, a long car ride or something, I'll get, like, a little, like, jittery, or, like, I need to, like, stops are not for, like, me to get a drink or, like, go bathroom, like, it's for me, like, to, like, kind of get a breather or, like, walk around a little bit. Like, that was a couple years ago, so now I'm pretty good on it, but when it first happened, yeah, I was kind of scared. I didn't like getting in cars with random people, because I had just, when that accident happened, I got in a car with some guy that I didn't really ever drive with before, so I didn't know how he drove. So I just didn't like getting in cars with random people, you know. Wow. Like, not random people, but people I've never noticed, like, seen drive, you know.
Yeah. So, wow. That's fucking crazy, dude.
Yeah, it was freaking crazy. What inspired me to join the Marines is actually kind of weird, because it's not like the cliche, like, honor, courage, and all that stuff. No, it was literally like video games and like Halo, Battlefield. And what the funny thing about Battlefield is, I'm playing either Battlefield or one of the games I played with my best friend. And my best friend's been wanting to join the Marines for the longest time. And he actually just joined. But we're playing, and I'm like, man, I really don't have any clue, like, where the hell I'm going in life. Like, I worked at a senior living home. I was like, I can't just work there for the rest of my life and stuff. I'm like, dude, what am I going to do? I was like, I'll probably join the army, I think. And he's like, my friend was like, fuck no, don't join the army. The army's for pussies and blah, 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 and stuff like that. And I was like, what? Like, because his dad later, I already knew this, but his dad was a Vietnam vet and he was a corpsman and he had worked with Marines. So he had a very high standard for Marines and stuff. So that had happened. My friend's like, you know, the characters in Battlefield. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, they're Marines, man. And I was like, oh shit. Well, I gotta be a Marine now, you know, like, cause I was younger and I was like, it's just one of those things. And then also the movie that actually got me to join wasn't like a cliche, like Lone Survivor or any of that. It was probably like one of the weirdest, like, movies out there. It's Battle Los Angeles with the Marines that are fighting off the aliens in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
That was a movie that got me into it.
Wow.
Yeah. That was the one where I was like, oh, looks badass. So my recruiting experience, like with the recruiter, it was way different. Cause I had the army guy come first. When I was thinking about it, because I was like, oh, fuck my friend. Like, he doesn't know what he's talking about. So I had the army guy come first. And, the army guy didn't even show up to my door. So he just called me and asked me about stuff and wanted me to come over to the recruiter office over there. But the Marine guy had showed up to my door with, you know, like the little magnet things and all this shit to, like, get you to go into the Marines and made me choose, like, which one I wanted, like, if I wanted travel or if I wanted experience or something else, you know? So it was cool. It was cool. And then, like, I wasn't in, like, the best shape of my life at that point, you know? Like, I was 18 and I was smoking and, you know, like, I wasn't in the best shape and I hardly could run and stuff. So he had told me that I had to do, like, an IST or something, like, some strength tests, like run and stuff like that. I ended up passing it, but like that was actually pretty challenging for me. But then later on in life, I like got better at running, but yeah.
Yeah. So were you able to pick your job?
Yeah. Yeah. I was able to pick my job. My job was, I was able to write on contract that I wanted to be O3. I didn't want to join the Marine Corps as anything other than infantry, mainly because my friend's dad, who's kind of like my dad, he had told me, like, if you're gonna go into Marines, you gotta go infantry, you can't go anything else. So I was like, all right, so I let that guy make the decision for me, and I went 03. And my mom was pissed. So it's actually really funny because when I was a pulley, one of my drill instructors had came down to our pulley function before I was even going to boot camp or anything. I knew what company I was going to in boot camp, and I knew it was going to be Fox. And so so I'm doing this little pulley workout, and this drill instructor comes by, and his name was, I think he was sergeant or staff sergeant, and he's young, and he's this, like, yoked dude. Like, I don't know what they feed him or whatever, but he was yoked, and, I mean, he had the brightest, whitest teeth I've ever seen in my life. Like, and he was this darker black guy. And so he's intimidating to me, like crazy intimidating. And I'm like doing push-ups or whatever they're making us do. And he's yelling at us and stuff. And we're doing this thing called Ring of Fire where you like sit there and you like jump across and stuff like that. And he had asked like, who's going to boot camp in this next month or whatever. And I said, I am, sir, or what, you know. And then later on, he like yelled at me and stuff, and he's like, I'll see you at Fox. So I had already seen my drill instructor before I had even left to boot camp, you know. So as soon as I get to boot camp, we do like the weird, like, wear these camis, like the pajama camis, like the ones that are way too big for you. Like, you put on your little go fasters, like all this stuff, like the beginning phase. And then we got to our platoons, and that guy wasn't my drill instructor. So I was like, I'm safe. I'm good. Like, but I guess word got around because late at night, I had went to bed and everything, like racked out, and the egg came over to my rack and while I was sleeping and like kept poking me into the side and was telling me to push and stuff. And I, like, that was my first time, like, actually kind of having a drill instructor in my face, like that close, you know, like, cause I was kind of like under the radar in the beginning, but I was like, what the heck? Like, I haven't done anything wrong. Like, I didn't do anything. I you said, like, all my P's and Q's are aligned and everything. And he's like, you need to start pushing. And the drill instructor voice and stuff. And I was like, what the hell is going on? So I had went to get out of my rack, and I was on the top rack. And, I was so stressed that I forgot that I was on the top rack instead of the bottom. And I pulled my sheets up, and I rolled off, and I, like, face planted onto the ground, you know? And the drone instructor, like, that's one of the times where I learned, like, they got a lot of bearing, because he didn't even, like, crack a laugh or anything. Like, and I just fell off my rack, and he's just telling me to push. And I didn't know who it was, because he was a darker guy, a black, so I couldn't see who he was either. All I could see was, like him yelling at me and stuff, and I was like, what the fuck? So I wake up the next morning, and I'm looking around at all the drone instructors and listening to their voice to try to figure out who it was. None of them sounded like him, right? And I was like, I don't know who this guy is. And then we get back from breakfast chow, and this was his routine now. We got back from breakfast chow, and he would IT me. He'd just, like, beginning, like, on the quarter deck, he'd come in there, yell my name. He didn't know how to pronounce it. Like, my last name is Zaiza. He would just say Zais. And just yell at me, and then I'd get on the quarterdeck and push for him. And it was after every meal. So, like, breakfast, he'd come in there. Boom. IT me. Lunch, come in there. IT me. Dinner, IT me. And I was, like, getting fucked with the whole time. So then him doing that to me then made my name big for all the other instructors, you know? So all the other instructors are hopping on my case and stuff because they now know my name and stuff. So,
wow. So was it the DI that you met?
That I met in Illinois. He was in my thing in California.
He came to find you, huh?
Yeah, he was headhunting. Yeah, headhunting. The unit I was with was 1st Battalion, 4th Marines.
That's right.
Charlie Company. Jumping straight out of the gate from ITB and the school into the unit, I was like, man, like, at first I hit the pavement. We were actually not in the camp that we were supposed to be in. We were in a different camp at that time because they had just got back from deployment. And that day was just really weird because I didn't know the, like, I Lance Corporal. I didn't know any of that. You know, I just hit the pavement And we're, the first thing we do is a formation. We don't even get our rooms yet. And we do this, formation. And, my friend, he's like talking to some Lance Corporal or whatever. And, he says, like, he's just talking to him, and then Lance Corporal's like, "That's I, Lance Corporal." My friend's like, "That's funny, you know?" Like, he's like, "Oh, that's funny." Like, he thought he was joking, and then we figured out, like, later, like, no, he's not. He's not joking. Like, they started running us, and, like, we still had our sea bags, so we were running, like, up and down the stairs, because it was in this place called Margarita. You went up and down the stairs. I think it was, like, 4 flights, and you just kept going, and they would tell you your room's at this room, and then you'd run back, and that wasn't your room, and, you know, and that was the first week in there. I was like, oh, fuck this. I'm finding alcohol. I'm going to drink. I'm going to get fucking plastered. Because, like, I was, like, my first time, I was, like, if I'm going to have to deal with this for a long time, I'm going to just start getting drunk on the weekends and shit. So I had one of my friends, his name was Hopkins, that I would drink with on the weekends and stuff. And one night, I had was hopping out of his room because, well, first of all, I don't think his, I think that was the same room where his door didn't work, so we always had to hop through the window and stuff and then, you know, hop back out. So I had hopped out of his window or something, and I hear, like, this big banging and stuff, and, that kid that had said, like, that's funny to that Lance Corporal was now some guy was on his door, banging on his door, and he's like, I'm gonna beat the shit out of you, get the fuck out of your room, like, screaming at him. And then another senior had came down, I guess, and he, like, started fighting, and then this big brawl broke out in this, this small, like, triangle area of this Margarita area. And these guys were, like, just beating the shit out of each other, like, from the same unit and stuff. And I was like, oh, fuck. Like, I was like, that's when I finally realized, like, this is going to be a long, long, long time, you know. And we had a lot of funny dudes in our platoon, too, so it made it really worth it. But at that time, there was a hazing incident going on with one of our older seniors. And it wasn't even over anything crazy. He was just making these kids fill up sandbags at, like, 1 o'clock in the morning or something like that. I don't even remember what it was about. So they went kind of easier on us at the beginning, but once they got out of that site of the barracks, it was when things were going a little crazier and, like, more downhill. We had a kid, one of my buddies, actually, funny dude. We were talking about the tomorrow's PT, like, with our team leader, and we were something, and he had, like, piped up and said gas mask run or something like that with the flak on and started adding all this stuff. So our team leader then did it. So we were, like, running with, like, boots and utes and our gas mask and our flak. That was, like, what we were supposed to wear down to the grinder to go do PT. And I guess the kid that had brought it up had brought his gas mask and he had no filters. He had brought his gas mask and pulled it out and put it on. There was no filters on his gas mask. So he got kind of fucked up for that. I mean, and then we had a lot of deaths in our company of just some of the dudes and stuff. But one of them that, like, stood out and was a big one towards me was this guy. He had just gone to advanced school, and the unit didn't really do a lot to train him and stuff like that. So he ended up not passing advanced school, and that wore down on him pretty hard. Along with other things, I'm guessing, but me and my friend were on duty, and he, like, came down and talked to us, and it was literally, like, a week later that he ended up committing suicide and hanging himself, which just kind of comes to show, like they don't, these things that they teach are fucking bullshit. The whole, he's showing signs, like, if his hair's messy, he's showing signs, or if he's getting rid of his clothes, because I can tell you right now, that guy didn't show any signs. He talked to us like normal. There was, and, like, we literally, I think it was, like, 2 or 3 days before that, me and this guy did a charity event with him. We were, like, packaging fruit. So, and at that event, he was, like, happy, go jolly. He was, like, freaking making jokes. He was hilarious. He was making jokes and stuff. And then, you know, 2 days later, 3 days later, whatever, he ended up doing that. He did talk about how he had failed school and stuff and was kind of down about it, but he wasn't showing, like, crystal clear signs. Like, I don't think anybody really shows crystal clear signs. I mean, I had another a friend that when I got out, he had, I don't know what had happened to him, but cause it's, I don't want to I don't know. But he was really happy-go jolly too. And it came out that he did it as well. But I mean, I remember teaching him guitar and stuff like that. And it was, and never, like, honestly, it was crazy because the guy that I'm talking about, like, he was one of the happiest people I've ever met, you know, like always happy, always willing to do something. Like, I mean, yeah, he'd get like pissed off and stuff, but I would like never see that, you know, I'd never see that. So we did jungle warfare training in Okinawa. And so there's like these salamanders, they're called newts, I think. Yellow-bellied newts or red-bellied newts or something like that. I mean, that training was probably one of the... It's like, if they could record... Instead of recording, like, the badass version of JWTC where you see people get muddy and, like, go on, like, ropes and towers, if they recorded, like, all the fails and all the freaking mistakes and the stupid shit that happens, and that, I think that would bring a better light to it because it is one of the most comedic things I've ever done in my life. It's just hilarious. I mean, we had a guy, one of my best friends named Andre, he's like crawling through this lake of like this little river, like that you have to crawl through during this thing called the endurance course, like with all this mud and stuff. And this lizard had gotten into his blouse. And he just like, I've seen him freak out about stuff because he was my roommate for a long time. But, like, I've never seen him freak out that bad. Like, this, like, one, like, tiny little lizard, like fucking 3-inch lizard had gotten into his blouse. And he's, like, freaking out. And our platoon sergeant's right next to him, like, laughing his ass off. He's, like, freaking out, throwing the mud everywhere. He's throwing his rifle everywhere. Like, that, like, little thing did that to you. Ship life was, it's definitely interesting. Music, movies, playing cards. Learning new hobbies. Like, ship life is actually how I started drawing for, like, Phase Line. I started kind of doing it on ship. And then when I got off ship, I kind of, like, threw it away for a little bit and then, like, got back into it. But, yeah, like, I met a lot of great friends on ship, honestly. Like, friends that are, like, lifetime friends. And it's weird how it only takes, like, a couple weeks on ship to, like, meet someone and become friends with them. And the next thing you know, you're, like, hanging out with them every day. Because you're, like, right next to each other, you know? When we got back from Guam, I mean, because that was our first port that people could kind of get, like, really shit-faced drunk, and they got freaking obliterated. You know, like, it's, like, their first port, you know, they're going to get obliterated. So they got completely hammered, obliterated. I ended up breaking my hand that night. One of my buddies had grabbed the fire extinguisher off the ship and was spraying it all over, and then I guess he... Someone either threw the fire extinguisher at the TV or something, and it shattered this TV all over. These two bigger guys, like the chubby guys in our company, were about to beat the shit out of each other. I mean, one of them was too drunk to even stumble.
How'd you break your hand?
I punched, like, the wall. Like, I don't know, we were being crazy and stuff, and I was like, you know, like, it's just, like, in the moment, and I was like, boom, and I punched the wall, and I got a boxer fracture, like, up my pinky and my thumb, and I was trying to work the next day, but they wouldn't let me. And then they ended up putting a cast on it, and this is weird, because the guy that did it was a flight surgeon, so on the ship, I was like, okay, he's probably pretty good. And he, like, whatever that numbing agent is, he had put it in my wrist, you know, and he had hit the wrong one the first time. So my arm from here to my shoulder was numb, and it was only supposed to be like from here to like here or something. And then he hit the other one the second time. So that whole day on ship, my arm was like, like dangling, you know?
Yeah.
Transitioning out of the Marine Corps is probably the hardest thing I've ever done. And I don't say that like lightly. I don't I know people say like things are hard and stuff, but it is not physically hard. It is almost like very mentally hard, stressful. They don't really prepare you that well for getting out, like that TRS. I mean, maybe if you paid attention, but who's going to pay attention to something that you're falling asleep in? You know, like if they had like actual people that wanted to be intuitive and like actually do something with you, then I think you would probably learn something there. But it's more of an identity crisis for me than anything. And the way I countered that, and this isn't me trying to be motivational or life coach or any of that shit. The way I countered that was I went from looking back on what my life was before the Marine Corps and kind of going back to my hobbies that were before the Marine Corps, you know, because for the Marine Corps, I didn't have the Marine Corps to be part of my life or things that like I enjoyed. And going into that, like I went backtracked like all the way. Like as soon as I got out, I was like struggling. I was drinking, but I wouldn't say I was like drinking like alcoholic. Like, no, I was drinking quite a bit. But yeah, and then I started backtracking like a lot. I was like, what did I do before I like was in the Marine Corps? So I started drawing, I started playing guitar, I started doing everything. And then my drawing soon picked up with phase line and stuff, and that kind of helped me create what I wanted to do, like with my progression in the world or my impact and stuff. And then like it was just weird for me because I never, when I was in my life, I never had a point in my life where I was like, fuck, like I don't know who the fuck I am. Like I have no clue. I know things that I like and I have things that I dislike, but I have no clue what guidance I have towards this. Because before, like I always had someone to rely on, a friend, you know. I could roll out of bed and there was my best friend. Or I could walk down the hallway, there's a friend, you know, to talk to, build relations with and stuff like that. But now it's like, I don't have that. So I have me and that's it. And I have to find out who I am. And it's completely different than anything I've ever done. Like, cause for me, it's like a puzzle right now. And like, I have came far enough where I can kind of get the frame of the picture done. But with all the little pieces that go in, you know, and you're mix and matching, trying to figure out which one goes where, that's the hardest part for me. Is like trying to find your place, trying to find your purpose. Mm-hmm. I struggled with it a lot with purpose, but then as the phase line thing grew and all that stuff grew, I kind of learned that purposefully I was supposed to do art and supposed to create things. So I just started creating stuff, and that kind of helped me with my everything. Also my friends were a big factor. Because even though you can't wake up and flip out of bed and go talk to them, you can always call them. Like, it's crazy what these phones can do. I can FaceTime my friend that's freaking all the way in Northern California and they'll pick up, you know, it's crazy.
How'd you end up in, you were stationed at Camp Pendleton, right? So you just decided to stay in California instead of go back to Illinois? Or it was Illinois, right? Yeah.
The reason I didn't go back to Illinois was because in California I met my girlfriend now. So my girlfriend is a big part of that. Because my girlfriend actually helped me a lot with that identity crisis a lot too. She was the one that was there like, it's okay. Like you're getting out, like you can relax. Cause I was like, as soon as I got out, I was like, I need to get a job. I need to do this. I need to like figure out how to, you know, cause I didn't want to like slow down. And then she's the one that kind of helped me like slow down and get back into
it. Was she able to recognize that you were going through some type of struggle from transitioning out of the Marines?
Only because when I got out of the Marines, I started to, like, with her, like, when I was in the Marines, it's weird because when I was in the Marines, I was, like, tough guy. Like, I was trying to be tough, like, not tell her about my feelings and stuff and all that stuff. And then when I got out, I was like, well, I'm not really in the Marines anymore. I don't have to play the tough guy or any of that stuff or try to hide anything. So I might as well tell her everything that's going on. So I was very vocal to her about everything and very like, I told her everything. You know, if I was having a bad day, I'm telling her I'm having a bad day. I wasn't going to fake having a good day anymore or any of that because she would know. Like she's very good at that. Like knowing, oh, he's having a bad day and he's just going to fake it just to make it seem like he's having a good day, you know? The things that she did to help was, so one of them was just being very supportive, you know, because like when I started Phaseline, when I started my company and all that shit, we started from like the house and we were packaging our own orders and, you know, she was very, very supportive. Like if I didn't have her, I would be in like the biggest mess. Because when I started it, I had like names written on a piece of notebook paper and like the price for the shirt and, you know, their address and stuff. And I was trying to mark them out as I go. And she's the one that like got on the computer and, you know, because she's extremely organized. She made like this keynote or like this whatever it's numbers with like the tabs and all that stuff and where they are and a checkbox if they're done, a checkbox if they paid, like stuff like that. So that was incredible. She's the one that helped me, like, because we, at first, I was just gonna, like I was doing dude things, you know, like I was thinking, like, with a dude brain, like, oh, like, all I gotta do is print out these shipping labels and I'll just take some scotch tape and I'll just throw it over the labels, you know? But she was thinking, like one step ahead of me. She's like, well, what if you get, like, a label printer? So we got a label printer that would print our labels so then I could just rip and stick instead of, like, throwing scotch tape over the top of them, you know. What Phaseline is and how I came up with it is actually kind of going with the identity crisis thing. So when I was getting out, I was kind of learning, like, things. And I drawn the main logo that I have now is a logo that I drew maybe a couple months ago. But the first logo that I ever had was a snake around a rifle and stuff like that. And I had drawn that on ship. And then I had taken that, and I was sitting there, and I was playing Call of Duty. And my friend was like, do you really, because at first I was like going to be a firefighter. He's like, do you really want to be a firefighter when you get out? I was like, I don't know, man. Like, I just think like that's where money is. I can make good money there. He's like, you know, you gotta do things that are for you. Like, you can't be doing things that aren't for you. You know, like if you want to be happy, you got to do things that make you happy and not make you money and stuff. So I started thinking like, shit, like I need to make something. And at that point I was learning that breaking past some things, you know, you had to make moves, you know, in life to get past some certain barriers. So I just came up with Phaseline. I mean, at first I looked at a bunch of different names. I mean, honestly, when I first started, I was like, I had no clue what name to use. I just knew I wanted to put my art out there. I looked at like Breach and Clear or like stuff like different stuff like for names. And then Phaseline, I was reading through my notes when I was, like my old note taking gear when I was in, and there was a portion that was like about Phaseline battle drills and stuff. And it's like at Phaseline red, you're going to do this. At Phaseline green, you're going to do this. And then that automatically, when I was thinking about it later on, cause I was thinking, well, at Phaseline red, I'm going to start drawing again. At Phaseline green, I'm going to start playing guitar again. At this phase, you know, I kind of thought of my life as when I was backtracking, as those were like phase lines towards the end goal. You know, that's where it kind of came up. And the purpose behind it was literally like just to get my art out of my head and somewhere else. And with like with some things that have happened in the past, you know, like with people, I wanted something that like you could really be like remembered by. Like, you know, like it sounds really cheesy, but like, you know, I make some different shirts, but like if someone has like the 0311 old rifle shirt, they're going to think like, oh, that was like the Phaseline Co. shirt. And then like that piece of my mind or like my art is now in someone else's closet other than just in my like head and stuff. So it's just like a big scheme of things. It's just getting my brain other than inside my brain, you know, yeah. Getting my art somewhere. Yeah. The art I specialize in is mainly like military. I'll do all types of stuff. Like there's one drawing I did, and it's a guy. It's actually Atlas. It's the Atlas Stone, and it's the brain on top of him. And that was like one of the biggest pieces that I've ever like really wanted to put out there and get out there in the world, because I think it's really relatable, you know, like how much power the mind has over the body, you know, It can really just like make or break you. There's the girl that's turning into stone with the Medusa and the rifle. I did that for someone. I've done like a lot of art for units. That's another thing, because when I first started, I was like, fuck, when I was in the Marines in Cutthroat and Charlie, they had told me to draw out the shirt for Charlie Company's logo. So I did. And our gunny had taken it and fucked it up, like completely, like obliterated it, made it look awful. But the first logo I did was for Charlie Company. But then later on, I was like, man, like all these guys are like walking around with these uni shirts that don't look like super cool, you know, like they're the old school logos or stuff. So like, and especially I wanted like teams and squads and stuff to be able to have like their shirts that are like for them. So like guys had came up to me asking for unit shirts, and that's like where I just start cranking out like the best stuff I can for those guys, because obviously they deserve it, you know?
Yeah.
Like everybody likes like the black, like with the cami pants and the black hoodie, and it has something cool on the back. Like everybody loves that, you know? Mm-hmm. So I stay connected to the people I served with most of the time. Some of the people I served with, it's hard to get in touch with them because they're either doing things or, you know, everybody has their own life now. That's one of the biggest things that was hard for me, is like, it's sometimes it is hard to get that phone call or get that FaceTime. So, yeah, but I call on Wednesdays, and like today, I call almost all of the guys I really stay in touch with deeply. So I'll call like my friend Hagar, my friend Riley, my friend Andre, my friend Jesse, like a bunch of those guys that I'm like really close with, that I was close with in the Marine Corps. But I'd say like drawing, connecting, whether that be like connecting with people you've never met before. Like for me, at least, like the whole veteran artist community, there's a bunch of us. There's like Tebow and Ben and all these guys that I'm in a group with, and we share art like every single day. There's like something going on in that chat. And that's like one of the coolest things that I've had this year, is that chat. Like that chat has helped me a lot, you know. When I've actually opened up in that chat and said like, hey, like, I don't know what it is, but I'm just feeling off today. Or I don't know what to do. Where do I find purpose in life? And they'll send messages, you know, about that stuff. And they're supportive, even though and it's so weird because it's a bunch of different branches these artists are from. There's guys from the Army. There's guys from, I think it's actually primary Army and Marines, but, and reservists, you know.
It's a veterans group though?
Yeah. The group is all veteran artists. It's a whole group of veteran artists that we had created between me and a bunch of guys that were, on Instagram, you know, doing our clothing stuff or drawing art and getting it out there in the world as our way of kind of getting out of the identity crisis or anxiety or depression or any of that stuff, you know.
Yeah.
That's so, our way of doing that.
So it sounds like you've reconnected with veterans, like with the veteran community then, and you know, because one of the common things I've noticed, but doing these interviews, I've done almost 100, nearly 100 now, is, you know, everybody that struggled to transition after getting out of the military, one of the ways that they've came out of it was reconnecting with other veterans, and whether it be other veterans that have similar, interests. Like in your case, you connected with veterans, but not just veterans, but veterans who like to draw and like to do art and stuff. So it seems like that's been a big help for you.
Reconnecting with veterans is probably one of the biggest helps I've had. And I think I've gotten a lot better with the identity stuff since reconnecting with veterans and getting in that groove with everything.
Yeah. Do you think, let's say, maybe if they were all just artists, but they weren't veterans, do you think you'd have the same experience?
I think if they were all just veterans and not just veteran artists, I think I would have.
No, not just veterans, but just artists, but not veterans. Like if these guys weren't veterans and they were just a group of other artists and drawers, would you be able to open up like you're talking about?
No. I don't think there's a possibility that I would open up to some of the artist guys. Mainly because we can joke about things that no one else jokes about. We can say things that no one else will say. We can, like, I mean, that chat, like, it can get pretty, like, dark humorish and stuff like that, because that's just who we are as, like, people, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think if it was just an artist group and not like a veteran artist group, I think I would kind of be, I think I probably would have left the chat just because like I don't co-align with that type of side of things very well. I co-align with the veteran artists because they're drawing stuff that I can relate to and stuff like, you know, like that I actually care about and stuff. Like, they'll be drawing, like, mortars and, like, 240s and stuff like that. Like, we draw, like, Rick and Morty. Like, I drew Morty on a 240 and I sent it to them. They sent a bunch of stupid shit. And then, like, you know, like, it's just completely different than what it would be anywhere else.
Right, right. Where can people find your art?
So the place people can find my art, it's all on Instagram, and it's just phaseline.co. So, I mean, you just search that up, and you'll find it. Yeah, I haven't really branched out to any other social media platforms other than that one.
All right, man. Well, we're going to get ready to wrap it up. Any last words?
Negative.
Thanks for being here, brother. I really appreciate you coming and sharing your story.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Got bad thoughts that make my mind scared. Hold me hostage and they don't fight fair. Who gon' pray for me and wipe on my tears? Who gon' save me if you not right here? Move this darkness and make my sight clear. Take me away cause I don't like here. Ghost of my past, they fill in the night air. Wake me up, I'm trapped in my nightmares.